Now the children of Israel have left Mount Sinai. They're beginning now the wilderness march that should have taken them only actually days to have gotten into the land. But it ended up by them spending years in the wilderness. And here's the first thing that rose that caused them a certain amount of problem. And I'll be just able to get down into this. And this, again, is something to me that's quite humorous. However, it's a pretty serious sort of a thing. Now, will you notice? And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. And the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled. And the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. Every time the people complained, the glory of the Lord appeared. He was displeased with their groaning and complaining. I'm of the opinion he's displeased with many of these criticizing, complaining saints today that are everlastingly finding fault, and nothing seems to please them. God doesn't want it that way for you, friends. He wants you to be a happy, joyful Christian. Now the people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. And he called the name of the place Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. Now they began to complain. What's back of all of this complaint? Who were the troublemakers? Well, here they are, and we can locate them, and we'll just be able to locate them today. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Now they're beginning to complain. They're beginning to find fault. And who is it that started it all? Well, the mixed multitude. Now you remember the mixed multitude were those who were not sure who they were. They couldn't go up and join one of the tribes. They couldn't declare their pedigree. They weren't sure. And they weren't sure whether they should go on the wilderness march or not. After all, each one of them had a father or a mother down in Egypt, or a father and mother in the camp of Israel. There'd been this intermarriage. They're a mixed multitude. And they are just enough Egyptian to like Egypt. And they're just enough Israelites to want to go on the wilderness march. And you know, we've got our churches filled with people like that today. There are people that, yes, they want to mix with church people. They like to hear a good sermon. They want to go to church on Sunday. They want to live an upstanding life, they say. They want to be moral people. And so they've joined the church. They want to be with that crowd. But during the week, friends, they want to run with the world. They're a mixed multitude. They're with Egypt 6 days during the week and with the church 1 day a week. They're not quite sure really where they do belong. They're not sure of their salvation, that is for sure. And I have discovered over a period of many years as a pastor, and I can say this now that I'm no longer a pastor, I've discovered that the real troublemakers in any church today are the mixed multitude. They actually are going with the world, and they're going with the church people. They like to have a church banquet, but they don't want Bible study, you know. That's getting too close to the ark. They want to stay way back, you know. They're not sure, but what they might turn and go back sometime. They're never quite clear. They're never happy when you're having a real time of spiritual blessing. They're uncomfortable there. And they're uncomfortable with the world. They just don't seem to fit in. They're a square peg in a round hole. And they just don't seem to fit. And they're generally troublemakers. Now here, this crowd, they fell a-lusting. And what was it you think that they wanted? Listen to this. We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. Boy, what they liked. Everything they liked was a condiment, except fish, of course. And you can't catch many fish out in that wilderness. Weren't many lakes out there then. And these people weren't eating fish, but boy, had they had fish down in Egypt, all the fish they wanted. And I'm of the opinion they got pretty tired of fish down there. But now that's what they remember. And they remember, notice, cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic. And everything they liked either grew on the ground or in the ground. Boy, they did like it down like that. That was sort of like root hog or die. They were the kind that wanted the worldly, earthly things And that's what started all the complaint. They didn't like Bible study, I can tell you that. Someone said that an apple a day keeps the doctor away, but an onion a day will keep everybody away. And garlic will keep the whole community away. But it is good in meat, is it not, and in other things. Now, that's what they remembered. And the things they remembered are things that grew on the ground or under the ground. And now listen to them complain. Verse 6, but now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. Now they're complaining about manna. Can you imagine that? Here they have manna to eat, and what happens? Well, they begin to complain about the manna, and they didn't like it. And now what happens? The Spirit of God comes along and describes it for us for the second time, what manna was. In other words, the Spirit of God says, this is what they're complaining about. Here is the thing that they did not like, and how wonderful it was. Now, verse 7, and the manna was as coriander seed, and the color thereof as the color of bdellium. And the people went about and gathered it. Now, it was not a monotonous food. The fact of the matter is, when we get to Deuteronomy, we'll find there that God told them, when you went through the wilderness, your foot did not swell. And that means that they didn't get beriberi. Beriberi comes from eating that which is just one article of food. Well, now they're just eating manna in the wilderness, and yet they didn't get beriberi. What does that mean? That means that manna had all the vitamins in it. It means it was God's food. And this manna, of course, speaks of Christ. And speaks of the Word of God that reveals Him. The manna was as coriander seed, and the color thereof is the color of bdellium. And the people went about and gathered it. Now notice the different ways it could be fixed. And they ground it in mills, or beat it in a mortar, and baked it in pans, made cakes of it, and the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. And when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. Now, here is the description given of it. It was not monotonous food. It could be fixed in many different ways. They could bake it. They could fry it. They could slice it. They could grind it. They could make bread out of it. They could make cake out of it. They could just about do everything with the manna. In fact, I'm not sure but what Ms. Moses got out of cookbook. Mother Moses' Cookbook on Many Ways to Fix Manna would be the title of her book. And you could just fix manna any kind of ways. It was a very marvelous food. And the Spirit of God is saying, look, this is what the people are despising. And isn't that true? Somebody says to me, my, that was terrible that they did that back in those days. We would never do that. Well, this manna's Christ. How do you feel about him? I had someone that made the complaint. They were formerly a member of the church I served in Los Angeles. And when they left, they made the statement to someone else. They said, well, we got tired down there. All Dr. McGee did on Sunday was just give an invitation, and all he did was just preach the gospel. And that's about the best compliment they could have paid me. But you see, they got tired of manna. It's amazing today how people get tired of manna, but they do. They don't like Bible study either. A lot of people don't. Now, we're thrilled at the response we've had to this, but we also recognize that a large segment of the church, and the largest segment, they're not concerned about Bible study, friends. They just don't want it. They don't go for it. And that is, of course, the predicament of the church today. It's due to the fact they've turned from the Word of God, and they're trying to feed somewhere else other than on the manna that God has provided. Now will you notice after this that even Moses is getting a little weary of this crowd by now, and I have a certain sympathy for him, but notice what he's doing here. Then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. And Moses said unto the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant, And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Question is Moses complaining? I think he is. Sounds to me like that he is complaining here. He says, have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them that thou should say unto me, carry them in thy bosom as a nursing father beareth a sucking child unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? Whence should I have flesh to give unto all this people? For they weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. I'm not able to bear all this people alone, because it's too heavy for me. This is Moses. He's complaining, friends. Moses wasn't a perfect man by any means. He was just a plain human being, but mightily used of God. Now, will you notice verse 15, and if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of hand, if I found favor in thy sight. Let me not see my wretchedness. Moses said, I'd rather be dead than go through what I'm going through with this crowd. My, that crowd, friends, were very difficult. I know many pastors that have ulcers going to doctors. Some have had nervous breakdowns. I know several men that have gotten out of the ministry. You know why? They're doing the same thing Moses is doing. They're complaining to the Lord about the fact that the burden's too great. They got tired of hearing the criticisms and the complaints and the whining and the difficulties. May I say to you, you say they ought to bear it. Well, look at Brother Moses here, friends. Now notice what God's going to do, and I want to say to you now very definitely, Moses made a mistake in complaining like this to God. For what did God do? Will you notice this? And the Lord said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. Now God says, all right, Moses, I'll give you help then if that's what you want. In other words, Moses is saying, I'm the one bearing all these people. Well, he wasn't. And God never asked him to. And God was bearing them and also bearing Moses. And Moses was not fully cast upon God himself. And now God very patiently and very graciously, he provides now assistance, and the 70 are appointed. By the way, this 70 continued down in their history, and one day the 70 met. They were the Sanhedrin, by the way, and they decided to put Jesus to death. I think maybe Moses shouldn't have started this organization. We think today in the church, if we'll multiply committees and organizations and methods, that'll solve our problems. But that hasn't solved the problems of the church today, and we don't need another organization. We've got enough right now. Let's be done with the organizations. We don't need a Sanhedrin. And so here is the beginning of the Sanhedrin. Now, verse 17, I'm reading, and I will come down and talk with thee there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. Now, if God had called Moses to do it, God would provide the strength for him to do it. God always does that. He never asks you to do more than you can do. And if you feel like that you are overworked or that you are doing too much, then maybe you really are. Maybe that you're doing more than God wants you to do, because God will not overburden those that are his own. Now notice verse 18. And say thou unto the people, sanctify yourselves again tomorrow, and ye shall eat flesh. God says, you want to eat flesh? I'm going to give you flesh. In fact, it's going to stick in your teeth. I'm going to give you so much. It's quite interesting, the comment that the Spirit of God makes later in the time of the writing of the Psalms upon this. Over in Psalm 106, verse 15, which is a historic psalm, I read this. He gave them their request, but he sent leanness into their soul. He granted their request, but he sent leanness into their soul. And this has with it a terrific message. God heard their complaint, and God answered it. He heard their request. And I imagine a few of them ran around and said they got their answer to prayer. But notice what followed. He sent leanness to their souls. Now, all the requests that you and I make to God, we're to do it with thanksgiving because God's going to hear an answer. Now, most of the time, to me, he says no. Not yes. He says no. I won't grant it. And that's a good answer. I found in the period of years that that's the best answer that God can give. Many times he won't grant it. But many times God will grant your request. And when he does, he sends leanness to your soul. You get what you pray for, but it wasn't the best thing for you. And that happens, I think, oftentimes with Christians. I remember a certain man that I had who was an officer in my church years ago in another city. And he came to me one day and he said, "Pray for me. My business is shaky right now. In fact, it's in jeopardy. And I want you to pray that the Lord will bless me in my business." Fact of the matter is, he says, "I have an opportunity of becoming wealthy, and I would appreciate you praying that I might make money." And you know, I was a young preacher then, and I just went immediately and prayed that the man would make money and that God would establish his business. And you know, God did that. This man, of course, prayed, and God heard his prayer. He got rich. That was the worst thing ever happened to that man. He lost all of his children. When they found out they had money, they'd been fine family until they got more money than they needed and that they should have had. He granted their request, but he sent leanness unto their soul. He said to them, "You're going to eat flesh. I'm really going to give you flesh." And now, notice what he says, "For ye have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, Who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you flesh, and ye shall eat." And that's exactly what he did. And we find here that Moses said, verse 21, "The people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen, and thou hast said, I'll give them flesh, that they may eat a whole month. Now shall the flocks and the herds be slain for them to suffice them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them to suffice them?" The Lord said unto Moses, "Is the Lord's hand waxed short?" Moses said, "How are you going to do it?" God says, "I'll do it." And you never need to ask God how if he lets you know he's going to do it. He'll do it, friends, and he doesn't need your how or my how. He does it his how. He does it the way he wants to do it. And Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord, gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people, set them round about the tabernacle. The Lord came down in a cloud, and he spake unto him, and took of the Spirit that was upon him, and gave it unto the 70 elders. Came to pass that when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not cease. Actually, there was no more power than there was before. There was lots more machinery than there was before, but not any more power. The same Spirit was divided among them. Now we find that God's going to also give them flesh to eat. And there remain, we're told here, two in the camp that prophesied at this time. There remained two of the men in the camp. The name of the one was Eldad, and the name of the other, Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them, and they were of them that were written, but went not out unto the tabernacle. And they prophesied in the camp. And there ran a young man and told Moses, and said, "Eldad and Medad do prophesy in the camp." And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his young men, answered and said, "My lord Moses, forbid them." Joshua was for Moses, and he was loyal to him. And Moses said unto him, "Enviest thou for my sake? Would God that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them." This, friends, is a very wonderful chapter, and the next chapter is too. It reveals that there wasn't a jealous bone in the body of Moses. He had no jealousy at all that these others were able to prophesy. Actually, there are three great sins of the ministry. You know what they are? Number one is laziness. Number two is jealousy. And number three is boredom, just being boring. And some of us are guilty of all three, maybe. But Moses was not a jealous man. Jealousy is an awful thing. Now we find that the Lord really gives them quail to eat. He's going to provide the quail on toast. You couldn't have it better than that. Verse 31, there went forth a wind from the Lord and brought quail from the sea and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side and as it were a day's journey on the other side round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. I just can't imagine quail like this. I've been quail hunting and looked all day and maybe found 2 or 3 quail, but just imagine them like this. God really provided quail for them. And the people stood up all day and all that night and all the next day, and they gathered the quails. He that gathered least gathered 10 homers, and that's about 86 gallons. And I don't think they had cold storage. They had to cook all this up. And they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord smote the people with a very great plague. He called the name of the place Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people that lusted. That's gluttony, despising the manna. God judges those things, still does. You remember Paul said, if we judge ourselves, we'd not be judged. But when we don't judge ourselves, we are judged, that we not be judged with the lost. Now, we find that the great number of them were slain.